Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Wilson Pickett famously recorded this song, The Land of a Thousand Dances, but there was one dance he couldn't anticipate. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, our series on dance fads continues with a dive into the mosh pit. Plus, bassist Mike Watt of the punk group Minutemen stops by to talk about a new photo memoir. And we get a sneak peek at the new music festival Crossing Brooklyn Ferry. But we begin in the pit. In the mosh pit. In the 1980s, audiences at hardcore punk shows began pushing, shoving, and ramming into each other, and slam dancing was born. Joining me here in the studio to give us a bit of the history of the mosh pit is Michael Azarad, author of Our Band Could Be Your Life. Michael, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, John.
So this dance, and we've already got a couple of listeners commenting, that's dancing, but let's leave that for the moment. This comes out of the early years of the punk movement.
Sure, yeah. And it, you know, basically comes out of pogoing, which was jumping up and down very vertically. And then later on, American kids started doing something called slamming, or slam dancing, which was horizontal, basically, bumping into people. It's a lot more violent and, you know, some would argue more fun.
Now, pogoing always struck me, we pogoed because there was no room to do anything else. To do slam, to like back up and charge into each other requires a little bit of space. So did this kind of grow as the scene developed and moved to somewhat bigger places?
It's like the DC slamming, I think, started in, you know, school gyms and places where, you know, community centers and things where those shows kind of happen. So, and it was a pretty small community. So, yeah, it's very possible that they had very few people and a lot of space. But, you know, later on, of course, slam dancing started happening in very, very crowded situations.
Right. Now, as the 80s progressed and punk gets more hardcore, you see this kind of really more violent motion involved, starting, it seems, on the West Coast, then, as you say, D.C., and eventually up to New York. Now, Black Flag, would they have been sort of the progenitors of this thing?
Well, I don't know about Black Flag, but certainly some of the places that they played, particularly in Orange County in California, a lot of really rough and tough kind of people got attracted to that very rough and tough music, and they danced in a very rough and tough way. I think part of it was to annoy older punks. You know, the original punks were a bit older, and this new generation of kids was, you know, much younger and, you know, full of beans. And I think they really wanted to, you know, literally clear the older ones out of the room.
We're speaking with Michael Azarad, music critic, drummer, author of the book Our Band Could Be Your Life. We also spoke earlier today with Jack Rabid, who publishes the New York-based rock magazine The Big Takeover, about the first time he saw slam dancing in New York, and here's what he told us.
When Black Flag came to play the Peppermint Lounge in March of 1981, all the D.C. kids came up, and, you know, they'd all met Black Flag when they'd been out there, and, of course, they were the number one band of, like, the slam dancing L.A. scene, so when Black Flag came on, all the New York kids started to do their, you know, usual punk rock dance. And then all the D.C. kids started knocking them over, which had never happened to them before. So there was a good, like, 20-minute period there of fistfights. Because when people aren't expecting to be knocked over, their reaction is to get up, find the person who did it, and then punch him in the face.
Dallas Coward, ride the cold. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Make this story what we say. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Try it.
Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Make this smart, can't think themselves. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. That is the band Black Flag with Rise Above. You also heard the writer and publisher Jack Rabid talking about the first time he saw slam dancing here in New York at a Black Flag concert back in 1981. And Michael Azarad with me here in the studio. Was there something in the music or in the lyrics of the early hardcore movement that would incite this kind of movement?
Well, I mean, early hardcore was just way more aggressive than I think, you know, any other popular music has ever been. And it attracted a certain type of person, generally an aggressive person, generally a male person, generally a young male mm-hmm. person. And consequently, the concerts, you know, got out of hand. In D.C., though, it originally was actually way more female-oriented. There were a lot more women moshing. And it was, you know, Cynthia Connolly, one of the original D.C. punks, told me, actually, for Our Band Could Be Your Life, that it was a lot of fun to mosh. And then later, more violent kids started coming in and made it miserable for everybody. But originally, it was kind of a lot more fun.
And the bands themselves had somewhat ambivalent views of what was happening right at the foot of their stage.
Some obviously really loved it. When like Fear from L.A. played in 1981 on Saturday Night Live and actively encouraged, you know, moshing and caused a lot of damage and it was a big scandal. But by 1983, Minor Threat, the vanguard. A hardcore band was absolutely sick of it. They were sick of seeing people getting hurt. They were sick of getting their instruments trashed, and they really wanted it to chill out. And ever since then, bands have complained about it.
Now, do you draw a distinction between slam dancing and moshing?
I do. Moshing, to my mind, is an umbrella term for all those, you know, kind of post-hardcore audience participation moves. So, I mean, yes, there's slam dancing. There's crowd surfing, stage diving, a so-called skanking where you wave your arms and legs around wildly in the middle of a crowd. There are all kinds of the wall of death.
Don't know that one.
The wall of death. That's kind of a metal invention. It's when the singer says, okay, everybody, either line up to the left or the right. And you there's this massive rectangular space in the middle of the floor. And then the singer says, okay, now everybody run right at each other.
Well, that's not like a group slam dance then.
Yes. But it's a very specific thing, John. It's a wall of death. You should try it sometime.
Yeah, maybe right after the show, you and me.
Awesome.
Michael Azarad's with me here in the studio. Our series all this week on dance crazes brings us today to, again, something that some of our listeners are questioning, whether this is dancing at all. I mean, it's sort of choreographed movement, you know? You have to do it. You have to know what you're doing. Otherwise, people can and will get hurt.
It's a physical expression of the music. I would say, you know, that's, to me, that's dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, you know, I really think partially, well, Ian MacKay actually told me, again, told me for Our Band Could Be Your Life that he said it was part of it was a reaction to the hustle and the bump and all those disco dance things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was also a reaction to, you know, hippie dancing, hardcore in general. You know, where hippies had long hair, punks had short hair. When hippies had formless music, punk had very doctrinaire music. And everything was...
Well, especially in the case of Ian MacKay and Minor Threat, everything about them was doctrinaire. You know, no meat, no alcohol, no booze, no drugs.
Yeah. So, you know... And
no slam dancing.
Yeah, but an extended... But hardcore originally was a reaction, I think, also just to the way that hippies danced, you know? And it was resolutely aggressive and asexual. It was just really completely opposite to what the hippies had done.
Mm-hmm. KP from New Jersey writes this comment on our webpage: a favorite college memory of mine, a Ramones concert on Syracuse University campus circa 1984. The Police ended the concert early when they felt the mosh pit was out of control and someone might get hurt. No one did, just a lot of mad, drunk college students. We're continuing to see that sort of thing. In fact, just recently in Boston, a flogging Molly concert was shut down by the police at Boston's House of Blues because they were allowing slam dancing during a concert. We'll actually hear a little bit from Flogging Molly as we wrap up here. But we've been speaking with Michael Azarad, the music critic and drummer. His book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, is a great look at the early years of the Indian alternative rock movements. And we've been talking about slam dancing on the program today. Michael, great to see you again.
Great to see you too, John.
Wall of Death after the show. You
awesome.
And me.
I'm right there.
This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck listeners, how do you feel about moshing or any of the dance crazes we've covered this week on Soundcheck? Lots of emails have been coming in already. You can send your stories and comments to soundcheck@wnyc.org. And up next, someone who's seen many a mosh pit, bassist Mike Watt, formerly of the punk band Minutemen. He stops by to share his new photo memoir. And later, a sneak preview of the upcoming Crossing Brooklyn Ferry Festival with curator Bryce Desner and some of the bands taking part. This is Soundcheck.
As strange as that must seem, it's best not to breathe.